gentlemen, you are about to listen to the incomparable Win Twice Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, Scott and Holly. We always go over, brother, and that's the bottom line. Dig it? So sit back, relax, and prepare to be entertained.
WrestleMania 19 marked the first edition of the Showcase of the Immortals post the change in name to World Wrestling Entertainment. The Attitude Era was now in the rearview mirror and the company was knocking on the door of ruthless aggression, although many of the faces remained familiar. The Undertaker, still very much in his American badass phase, took on the seemingly impossible task of the Big Show and A-Train in a handicap match. Triple H would look to defend his World Heavyweight title against Booker T in a match that was marred by racial undertones, with the outcome leaving a bitter taste in the mouths of a number of critics. The Red and Yellow Hulk Hogan Express was still on the WWE tracks and would face off against the owner of the company in a match that was 20 years in the making. Without both of these men, WrestleMania would never have become the animal that it is today. Speaking of animals, the main event of the night would see the future Beast Incarnate, Brock Lesnar, challenge Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle for the WWE title. When all was said and done, the phrase "Here comes the pain" would have a very brutal tinge of reality. Over the years, headliners have come and gone, but 2003 would see the final competitive outing during his main run of former WWE champion, the Texas Rattlesnake Stone Cold Steve Austin, at the grandest stage of them all. Facing off against the toughest SOB was a man who would soon be departing himself for Hollywood on a more permanent basis, the people's champion, The Rock. The Great One will be hoping that third time really was a charm, having already chalked up two losses to Austin at 15 and 17. But it wasn't all despair, as WrestleMania 19 also saw the return of the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, as he would go one-on-one with Chris Jericho in what was considered a dream match by many, including one of the participants. Elsewhere on the card, we would see the WrestleMania debut of Rey Mysterio, as he would look to dethrone Matt Hardy for the Cruiserweight title. The women's title would be up for grabs as defending champion Victoria was matched against Jazz and Trish Stratus in a triple threat match. In other multi-person contests, the WWE tag team titles will be on the line in another triple threat between Los Guerreros, Chris Benoit and Rhino, and the title holders Team Angle. A night of mixed emotions for many, with more highs than lows, but one thing remained clear: WrestleMania would continue to grow and go from strength to strength as the years rolled on. Hello everyone and welcome back to episode number 67 of the Win Twice Wrestling Podcast, alongside your host Scott and Holly. And Holly, we might as well jump right back into part two.
Let's do it.
Of WrestleMania 19. So we've just had the Shawn Michaels Jericho match.
Yes.
We loved it, scored it highly. Unlikely that it's going to be beaten on this evening, one would assume.
Yeah.
I might be surprised by something you say later on, but I guess we'll find out.
Yeah.
We now go backstage where we see Sylvain Grenier in a SmackDown referee's uniform making his way to the locker room of Mr. McMahon. He knocks on the door, introduces himself before entering, and the door shuts behind him. That's the end of that. We head back to the arena where Tony Chimmel announces a new Safeco Field attendance record of 54,097.
Obviously.
It's never not going to be a record, is it?
Come on.
Like, they, do you reckon they just walk into a room and they go, it's a new attendance record in this room. There's six of us, guys. High five, hugs, let's have a brewski.
I like the sound of that, that's great.
Yeah, I'll be honest, I think the maximum people I've ever had in this room is three, so we're near maximum attendance in this room that we're recording in. The next introduction amuses me as Tony would welcome a live rendition from the WWE's favourite band ever. And I must stress, favourite band ever. That's no way that Fred Durst didn't make them say that.
Yep.
Doing a live rendition of their WrestleMania 19 song from the new album Crackhead, or Crack Addict, whatever the fuck it was, being released in the summer of 2003. Amazing. As expected, Fred Durst and co performed their latest single. Must admit, Holly, sometimes I still get this song in my head given the number of times I watched this show on DVD growing up. Holly, what'd you make of their performance?
To be honest, again, another great performance. For me, it wasn't obviously as entertaining as the first one, but it was great. Fine.
Again, absolutely. Ate up a lovely bit of time for me.
Yeah.
I didn't weirdly feel that far out of place either, which is odd, because normally these kind of stick out like a sore thumb, but the pacing of one thing to another on the show was done pretty well.
Yeah.
I will say they were over-reliant, as much as I've joked about them, the Miller Lite catfight girls, the number of little backstage bits between them, we didn't need that many, but at least they were all short, is what I'd say. So swings and roundabouts is where King is not allowed to go. Big flaming fireworks signal the end of the performance, and we head right back to Michael Cole and Taz on the SmackDown commentary team. I say that, we actually quickly shift to the coach, who is wearing a Seattle Mariners jersey, and he welcomes us to a special WrestleMania catfight. Holly, potential match of the night contender coming up?
No.
Oh. Coming out first is Tanya Ballinger. Ballinger? Tanya Ballinger? I'm going to say Ballinger. For those wondering, she's the blonde. And shortly behind her is Katana Baker. You guessed it, the brunette.
Mm.
The two women sit on either end of the Persian Playboy's bed and begin to take their heels off. Coach wants to confirm the rules in play for this match before anything gets started, and apparently they're very simple, yet very complicated. No heavy metal objects allowed, only what is found on the bed. What if there's a metal object on the bed?
Oh.
Well. The two women begin seductively crawling towards one another, and when they are very rudely, and I do say very rudely, interrupted by the music of Stacey Keibler. King. She is almost 6 feet tall and well worth the climb. Thank you, Uncle Jerry.
Oh, dear.
You didn't hear that one then?
No, I didn't. I'll be honest, I was probably just distracted by legs for days, I'll be honest.
Stacey grabs the microphone and reminds everyone that this is WrestleMania. Fuck me, I've forgotten.
Oh, my God.
I'd forgotten.
Is it?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, based on what you're seeing, you could be forgiven for mistaking it. Reminds everyone this is around, which one could have been forgiven for forgetting at this moment in time. Holly, got a question for you. What is better than two girls in bed?
Three.
That is the answer that Stacey tells us, and Stacey wants to be counted in making this a triple threat match.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't know what to do with myself, to be honest. Yeah, Coach, I guess we're going to have a three-way tonight.
He fucking wishes.
But, hold your horses, Tori Wilson's music now hits.
Yeah.
JR asked if King has seen the edition of Playboy that Tori is in. I would respond, does a bear shit in the woods? JR says it is unbelievable.
Oh.
JR says,
wow.
It's unbelievable, King. Unbelievable. Okay. That seems more King's territory to me than JR.
I suppose still, though, it's a nice way for him to put it. It's not like he's going, oh, yeah, I saw it.
Rock hard, JR.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what, King. By God, I was rock hard. By God. Oh, dear. Wouldn't blame him. Tori tells us that the only thing they're missing here is a Playboy cover girl. And I thought that about the house sometimes. I go, what could we do in this room? Playboy cover girl? Instead of like a chair or a lamp. Like just it's missing everything.
Missing everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
I've never once thought. I guess unless you're looking at a Playboy, would you go, do you know what this is missing? A Playboy cover girl. When is that ever? Fair enough. I mean, whatever gets you in bed, Tori, to be honest, which seems to be where you're going with this one. And in fact, she wants to make it a fatal four-way match, and she immediately rips off her top and does the same for Stacey. So, cool.
Fine.
Yeah. Whatever. I don't exactly know how to call this, and clearly neither does Coach. Tori rolls up Stacey for a pin, but instead decides to spank her ass like a bongo, because it'd be rude not to, I guess. Elsewhere, we have a really piss-poor pillow fight, and now these two women have also ripped their tops off, because reasons.
Mm-hmm.
As Stacey and Tori roll around on the floor, Coach has to jump over them, but isn't paying attention as they return, and gets knocked down and they steamroll over him. Tough night for the Coach.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to his feet with the biggest smile on his face, saying, "That's what I'm talking about!" Suddenly, all the women gang up on Coach, pull his trousers down, good job he didn't have an erection, push him over and pin him for the 1, 2, 3. Stacey's music plays, so I guess that makes her the winner, and the four women raise their arms for the cheering masses. In a drastic change of pace, we are now seeing on-screen graphic depicting the World Heavyweight Championship match between Triple H and Booker T. I'll be honest, Holly, I didn't count that as a match.
No, neither.
But seriously, what did you score it out of 5?
Nothing.
Oh.
It doesn't get a score.
Oh, but Stacey Keibler is undefeated at WrestleMania.
that's a fair point.
She's got a better... She stood there and just did the one finger like Undertaker did with 10 at WrestleMania 18. Yeah. I'll be honest, as a kid, fine. When I was watching that back in the day. It. Yeah. Now, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's just... Why, I guess, is the main takeaway there for me. But anyway. Where do we go? Oh, yes, of course, we've taken a massive change of pace and we are expecting to see Triple H and Booker T. Holly, what are your thoughts about a matchup between Triple H and Booker T?
Not really got any thoughts about it, weirdly. Like,
okay.
As in, I wasn't fussed by it, but I wasn't against it.
Okay, fair enough.
It didn't pique my interest as much as it could have, but...
Well... I guess we'll find out what you thought of it as the match unfolded. So we go to a VT package where Booker T informs us that he's had obstacles in his life put before him, which all started when his mother passed away. He was running around with his crew and got involved in a robbery and went to prison as a result. He knew what he did was wrong and wanted to put it behind him after serving his time. Booker says he's been with the company for 2 years and was desperate to get a title shot, which he now has. He says he'll be the next world champion and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Enter Triple H. The game says common street trash like Booker T doesn't even deserve to be in the ring with the likes of him. We'll get more on the connotations of that later on. Triple H laughs his arse off thinking about Booker T challenging him. He says there is one diamond in this business and you're looking at him. Holly, this is very much the phase where Triple H was trying to replace being the modern-day nature boy Ric Flair. The game acknowledges that Booker T was a 5-time WCW World Champion, but says that that company was a joke. Booker T says he will dance all over the World Champion's punk ass, and we see footage of Booker getting a measure of revenge against the game by beating him the week of WrestleMania in a match on Raw. Flair does his best to build up the confidence of the beaten champion, saying that at WrestleMania, Booker T doesn't stand a chance. Triple H looks at him and replies, nobody told Booker T that.
Ooh.
Quite a good little sign off that. We now go to the match.
Yes.
Triple H with Ric Flair. I'm an idiot.
Ooh,
I typed this as well. Triple H with Ric Flair versus Triple H. The irony of that, actually... The fact that I've put Triple H was against himself. Might as well have been.
Yeah, why not?
In this era. But Triple H with Ric Flair versus Booker T for the World Heavyweight title. In a move that you know I'm not fond of, coming out first to the ring is the defending champion Triple H.
Why, don't get it. Yeah, and I tried even watching the entrance. I don't understand why he came out first.
Of all people as well, Triple H not coming out second seems weird.
It didn't make sense.
He looks weird without facial hair.
Yes.
Just putting that out there.
No, I agree.
Hollywood, you're a massive schnoz, though. You're a fan of that, though, so that works. Hollywood, please, though, as we get the traditional Triple H entrance with water spit and all.
It's almost there. He's got purple pants on, which didn't do it for me.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the purple pants in a minute.
No.
Did you know, Holly, but this match had some rather unpleasant undertones. As you heard, they were keen to point out that Triple H was better than Booker T and that the challenger was very much beneath the champion. So I've got a story here from, you guessed it, the Sportster.
Oh, okay.
There have been plenty of poor feuds over the years in WWE, from the weird to the spooky to the downright disgusting. WWE also haven't shied away from storylines which have bordered on the distasteful and offensive. The rivalry between Booker T and Triple H from 2003 was one which raised a whole manner of question marks among fans, with many taking the feud to be directed towards racial prejudice. But masking itself to being strictly between the war between WCW and WWE. Either way, this feud does live in infamy for being one of the more controversial feuds in WWE history, as well as one of the worst booked ones too. Triple H's time as the number one heel on Raw as the World Heavyweight Champion has often been criticised, with there being many examples of potential top babyfaces who could have broken out or become bigger money-making stars in WWE had they defeated Triple H in a feud during a period which became known as the Reign of Terror. Many examples which saw Triple H emerge victorious were in rivalries against the likes of Randy Orton, Scott Steiner, RVD and Goldberg. Booker T was another who got added to that list, with him not quite finding his feet in WWE by the time 2003 came round since signing with the company following Vince McMahon's purchase of WCW. The former WCW World Heavyweight Champion had proven his worth there, but much like many other WCW mainstays and top stars, he wasn't given much. Sorry, he wasn't given much momentum. That was until the build-up to WrestleMania 19, when Booker would win a 20-man battle royale to earn the right to challenge Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship at the biggest show of the year. It looks as though Booker could potentially start to fully gain momentum. At first, it seemed as though this feud was going to be all about the wrestling war between WCW and WWE. By this time, though, the invasion angle had been done and dusted for well over a year. Anything which referenced WCW and WWE was becoming tiresome, with the invasion becoming a convoluted mess of a storyline, which Team WWE ultimately won decisively, ending the war for good, even though it had already been over since WWE bought them out. When meeting in the ring, Triple H said that despite Booker T being a former champion, it didn't mean anything due to the poor legacy of the belt created by WCW, with the likes of Vince Russo and David Arquette holding the gold towards the end of WCW's existence. These were good points, but it was when Triple H got to his next point that things started getting a little questionable. He brought up Booker T's past as a criminal, serving nearly 2 years in prison. Triple H also stated that people like you aren't the type to be a world champion. Prior to their match at WrestleMania, Michael Cole even asked Triple H if his comments were racially motivated, which made it undeniably clear that WWE had intended his remarks to have offensive connotations. Triple H may have denied this to Cole, but the question alone was clear proof of what WWE were going for with this storyline. WWE crossed the line a lot during the Attitude Era and even into the Ruthless Aggression Era, but this felt like too much. Perhaps WWE would have been forgiven though if Booker T had overcome the evil and dastardly heel at WrestleMania. Not knowing that, Holly.
Yeah.
Is it now you look at it and go, oh, actually.
I guess.
But you can look at that one of two ways. The fact that you watched it and didn't think anything of the sort.
No.
Suggests that, was it that obvious that they were doing that?
I guess also not having seen anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just the match.
Apart
and
from
the
VT package, yeah.
Because also, like, people like you, I wouldn't automatically assume that that was what was being referred to. I would assume it was the criminal side of
it. I would have assumed criminal. My brain wouldn't have gone, yeah, oh, no, he means black. He's talking about him, the fact Booker T's black. No, I would think criminal.
Yeah.
But maybe that says something about us. But I don't think it was as obvious as what they were making it out to be. Because, like I said, my brain goes criminal.
Yeah.
Even with the way Triple H delivers it, but it's the likes of you people, I guess, is that whenever you use the phrase you people in any kind of conversation or discourse, it's always a touchy point because it's never meant in like a compliment, is it? So I think the thing that really kind of hampered them is the fact with the outcome of the match.
Yeah.
I think if the match had gone the right way, this probably wouldn't have been looked back as nearly being as kind of controversial as it was. And it's not massively controversial, I guess, but it kind of, you know, makes people think a lot about what exactly they were angling for here.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was an interesting point that,
apart from getting people not to like Triple H, which I don't understand because they were so heavy on him.
Yeah.
I don't really get it.
For me as well, I remember watching. So, I put myself in my 14-year-old shoes, I guess, and think about what I thought of this match. I remember thinking, I like Booker T, I don't like Triple H, I'd like Booker T to win because he's the underdog.
Mm.
And then I remember how he lost, and I was like, oh. All I remember, my takeaway from this was, oh.
Yeah.
So, obviously, that'll become more prevalent as we go through the match, but as we've done with all the others, Holly, whose side were you on for this one?
Now hearing all this backstory, this makes me sound awful.
No, it doesn't.
But
no, it doesn't.
All I do is go, it's this person and this person. There's no story. There's nothing. So it's Triple H for me.
Okay. I pick Booker T because I'm not racist.
Oh, shut up.
Right. But back to the match. And out second is the challenger. I was always a fan of his entrance pyro and music in general. Good stuff for Mr. Booker T.
I always remember, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you because I'll forget otherwise.
Go for it.
I always remember, this is so pedantic as well, thinking he looks huge and he's a tall man. Like he's like, I think he's 6'3".
Yeah, I think 6'3", yep.
But his body composition and his outfit, to me, made him look ginormous, right?
Yeah.
So he's obviously got, he's a tall man anyway. He's a lot of leg. But he's got the wrestling pants on. He's then got boots which to me come up to right above his shins, but then there's still a big old gap between boot and knee pad.
Yeah.
And I remember always just looking and being like, how tall is this guy?
Yeah, no, he's got...
He's a lot of leg.
Yes, the odd proportion is what does it. But he's a tough guy as well. Mm-hmm. Very tough guy. King asks JR if he'd be happy if a common thug like Booker T was the world heavyweight champion, and JR responds that he's not even going to dignify that question with an answer. JR follows up saying that he has as much right to be the world heavyweight champion as anybody else who has ever competed for it. JR does a very good job of going, no, I'm not fucking having this. Mm-hmm. This is the reality
of it. I'm not playing this game.
Exactly. Yeah. JR talks about Booker T's credentials as being a five-time WCW champion, and King reiterates that the company was a joke. JR asks King if he ever worked at WCW. He responds that he didn't, and JR exclaimed, well, I did. King asks if the company was a joke, and JR quips, you're damn right. Which I thought was quite good.
Yeah.
But he's quick to point out that Booker T is no joke, and Triple H is about to find out. As the two men go nose to nose in the centre of the ring, Booker T points a finger at the champion and says, your punk ass is in trouble, before they separate. Nice.
Yeah.
And Booker T and Triple H does look a bit concerned. And make no mistake about it, in a fight, Booker T rips Triple H apart. As Batista found out one time. The title belt is handed to Howard Finkel, and this one is underway. We start with a collar and elbow tie-up that sees both champion and challenger jostle for position around the ring until Triple H ends up with his back against the buckles. They refuse to break the grip, forcing referee Nick Patrick to forcibly put himself between the two men, much like how Mr. Hebner would have taught him to. They go to close the distance, and Triple H grabs Booker T and throws him into the corner. Cheap shot by the game is blocked, and Booker lays him out with a right hand to the jaw. Alternating right hands and chops connect from the challenger, but Triple H lands a chop of his own. Big chop from Booker puts Triple H onto his back. More strikes in the corner, and Triple H is sent into the buckles and sent for the ride on a back body drop. Back to the corner, and it's yet more strikes on the champion, who is sent back into the corner, but this time gets the elbow up on the charge. Foreign territory for Triple H, who heads to the top rope, and he is unceremoniously brought crashing back down to the canvas with an arm drag, where upon landing he rolls to the outside. Booker is in hot pursuit, but hits a kick to the midsection. However, he prevents himself from hitting face first into the ring post, and instead treats the champion to the metal structure.
And drink.
That should say Booker T gets kicked in the stomach. It wasn't clear from what I typed. Flair gets a bit too close, and Booker marches him down before returning to the ring. Side headlock from the game, but he is pushed off and knocks the challenger down with a shoulder tackle. Drop down and leapfrog from Booker. Drop down and leapfrog from Booker, who has his hip toss blocked but connects with a short arm clothesline that gets him a one count. Mounting right hand lands as the five-time WCW champion looks to be in control. Two high kicks to the side of the head, but the back kick is blocked, and Booker is sent over the top and onto the apron with a backdrop. With a handful of hair, the champion runs Book face first into the ring post, sending him crashing down to the floor.
Drink again.
The action stays outside as Triple H runs his challenger into the steel steps before breaking the referee's count back in the ring. As Booker rolls back in, he is immediately met with a series of stomps. Elbow driven into the clavicle of the challenger as he's draped over the ring apron. King Booker. What?
Ooh.
Oh no, King Booker. Oh, that's funny.
It's jumped forward.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, yeah. But no, this is what King says. King Booker T is our world champion. You know, the guy whose family portrait is a courtroom sketch. Yeah, going back there. Mm. And I'll say that again because it was stupid the way I said it. King says, Booker T is our world champion. You know, the guy whose family portrait is a courtroom sketch. Thanks, King. Put your nipple away. Big kick to the sternum puts Booker back on the canvas. And Holly, I don't know if you noticed this, but the way the game's pants have ridden up makes it look like he has a lump coming out of his arse.
Oh, no, I hadn't.
Your speculation as to what that could be, please.
I hadn't looked.
Okay, well, just me looking at his arse then, fine. Neckbreaker scores, and it could be poop, we don't know. Neckbreaker scores, and Triple H gets a two count off of this. Precision punches to the side of the face, but Triple H finds his attempt to run the challenger's face into the buckles thwarted, and he eats the padding himself. Whip reversed, and we get a classic spine buster from the champion, but still only enough for a two count. Corner whip and a huge follow-up clothesline from Triple H sees Booker bounce into the air and onto the canvas for a near fall. Blatant choke from the champion. Back on their feet, and the two men trade blows, which the challenger gets the better of until he takes a knee to the midsection. Suplex attempt is countered as the challenger lands on his feet and scores with a brutal DDT. Both men are momentarily down. Big right hand staggers the champion and they resume trading blows. Again, Booker gets the better of this and he scores with a spinning back heel kick off an Irish whip. Sidewalk slam, which has Nick Patrick diving to make the count, but Booker fakes him out unintentionally and it's enough to make me laugh. Like, he went to go for a pin,
yeah.
The ref dives and then there's no pin, yeah. Which I find amazing. Duck of a clothesline, but Triple H cannot avoid the forearm on his return journey, but he does manage to kick out at two. Knee to the midsection, but as Booker T looks at his hand and hits the ropes, he is secured in a sleeper hold. To break free, when I say looks at his hand, like he was doing the bout,
yes. You know,
the preempt of the spinneroonie.
Before he does their head bounce.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
To break free, he runs and ducks towards the buckles, causing Triple H to hit face first, which is good. I always like that escape.
Yep.
High knee connects, putting the challenger down, which earns him a near fall. Whip is reversed, but Booker ducks and eats a facebuster after ducking. Whip is reversed, but Booker ducks and eats a facebuster after having ducked too early, but still has the presence of mind to just about connect with a spinebuster as the champion runs in. Hook of the leg gets the one, two, no. A beat down in the corner for the game, who is whipped to the buckles but gets the boot up on the charge. Triple H climbs to the second rope and takes flight but jumps directly into a jumping sidekick to the face, which looked incredible. It looked brutal.
Dead.
Both men are down and Ric Flair is losing his mind because Ric Flair. Booker with a cover, but it's only enough for two. Kick to the midsection, but the scissor kick is avoided and the second attempt sees the champion low bridge the challenger, causing him to tumble all the way to the floor. With the referee distracted, Ric Flair picks up his former WCW co-worker and lifts him, dropping him knee first on the ring steps. King claims that the Nature Boy was simply trying to help the challenger back into the ring, and that he fell. JR is incredulous and says that logic died in 1982. Nick Patrick begins his count, but in the nick of time, Booker rolls back into the ring. Lovely Indian deathlock by the game, and I really like that.
Yeah.
And JR says he hasn't seen that move in years. He claims it's about as perfectly applied as he has ever seen. The challenger looks to punch his way free, but a few right hands from the champion put an end to that. Now Triple H applies the hold on his front, and it is genuinely a great submission hold. I'm surprised nobody uses that today as a finisher. Eventually, Booker manages to make it to the ropes, causing the hold to be broken in the... Sorry, I finished the sentence there. In the corner, Booker has his leg draped over the rope before Triple H jumps into the air and drives his weight down on the back of the joint. Corner whip is attempted, but Booker cannot put weight down on the knee and collapses, which is a great sell job. We were talking about Paul Roma, who did a similar sell job at the end of, was it a Saturday night's main event? I can't remember what the show was now.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Because it was a 2 out of 3 falls. Oh no, it was the Royal Rumble. The first Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. It was the last match of the night. And he was doing a similar sell job with his knee. And this reminded me of that. Very good stuff from Booker.
It also makes sense.
It does.
It's not all of a sudden you just forget about it and run normally.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Flair is screaming that this one's over. Knee breaker is attempted, but the challenger goes over the top and secures a sunset flip, which nearly earns him the victory. Kick to the midsection and Triple H is looking for the pedigree, but Booker sweeps the legs. The challenger is pushed away by the feet of the champion and unfortunately squashes the referee in the corner in the process. Holly, are you ready for this bullshit? As Booker checks on the condition of Nick Patrick, he signals he's okay and both men have to avoid a charging clothesline from the game.
Mm-hmm.
Schoolboy roll-up gets the 1-2 no. Smart kick to the knee puts the challenger down, but Triple H runs into a jumping back elbow and now does eat a scissor kick at the third attempt. But Booker cannot capitalise. When he eventually does drape his arm over, it's not enough to keep the champion down for three. The challenger climbs his way to the top rope, but not before knocking the Nature Boy off the apron as he looked to interfere. Still not a smart move for a man with an injured knee, but he is cut off at the pass by Triple H. Superplex attempt is blocked and Booker punches away at the game until he falls down to the canvas. Another right hand for Flair sends him flying and in a move that I doubt Holly will have ever seen thus far, Booker connects with a Harlem Hangover. So Harlem Hangover, for those that aren't sure, is a flipping leg drop from the top rope which Booker T occasionally would hit in WCW called the Harlem Hangover.
Right, okay.
Both men, and you see why he doesn't do it now.
Yeah.
Both men are down and the official makes his count because basically Booker T's leg barely hit him, but if it did hit him, it hit him on the forehead and that's going to hurt. begin the count. Yeah, Booker lies his body across the prone champion, but the Nature Boy is there to put Triple H's boot across the bottom rope. Not for the first time we've seen that this evening.
No.
An injured challenger looks to go to the ropes to connect with another scissor kick, but once again his knee gives out. As he struggles to return to his feet, the game scores with a pedigree and both men are down once more. After approximately 15 seconds, Triple H places one hand on the chest, and this is enough for the 1, 2, 3. Triple H retains the World Heavyweight Championship by pinfall. That was one of the big issues that people had with it as well. It wasn't the fact that necessarily Triple H won.
Yeah.
It was the fact that he hit his finish, lay down for half a minute, went over, put a hand on him, and that was enough.
Yeah.
It was a proper fuck you,
yeah,
a little bit, to be honest. As an exhausted champion exits the ring, he's assisted by the Nature Boy, who furiously shouts, "This is the greatest of all time right here," as he points at Triple H. Holly, what did you make of the match?
I feel like that, comparing that to Michaels and Jericho, it's like two completely different entertainment values for me.
Yep.
This, I gave it 2.5. Middle ground, it was okay. I just, between about 3/4 of the way through towards the end, didn't care.
Yeah.
Didn't care. It was all very like procedural, tick a box. Flair's obviously going to try and get involved, do what he can. Just a bit boring.
I gave it the exact same score you did. Ooh. I gave it 2.5. It was fine. But the ending is just, I'm not even saying, like, if you don't want Booker T to win, fine. But my God, don't have him put down after the first finish for that long of a period
as
well.
A bit more challenging.
Have him kick out the first, then the second one bury him, or the second one he nearly gets out of and then he hits a third, and then you can do the arm over it to finish him like that. It just felt like you're right, you weren't on that level, mate. That's a little bit what it felt like. I remember as a kid, like I said, at the end of the match, I just went, oh. Because I remember thinking, he'll kick out of that because that's been too long. And he doesn't. You go, oh, what a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, it's, you know, how it's written to be, but it just, I don't know, didn't sit right to me even as a kid. But 2.5, I thought, was a fair score for it. We quickly head to a WWEshop.com commercial that says you don't need to do any training to be a WWE superstar, just come and buy their shit, please. Now we hear the voice of Michael Cole, who informs us that up next is a match that has been 20 years in the making, and we see a promo screen package of the street fight between Mr. McMahon and Hulk Hogan, brother.
Am I dim that I didn't have... I knew them girls were arguing earlier on about who created what, but it wasn't mentioned, was it?
No, it was.
Was it?
Yeah.
Who? But where did they say they were having a street
Austin
fight?
Austin versus The Rock.
Yeah.
McMahon against Hogan.
Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
That was at the start.
I assumed it was just a, we're just going to bitch about it, rather than,
no,
we're actually going to see... That.
No, it's literally talking about those two people having matches. Okay. Holly, what was going through your head when you thought about this match?
That I was really sad that I'm partaking in Lent this year, and that one of the things I said I'd do is not drink, like, unless I'm in a social situation, because I really would have liked to have had a beverage in my hand to watch that.
That's fair. An added stipulation to this match is that Hulk Hogan's career is on the line. For context, we are shown the history of the relationship between Mr. McMahon and Hulk Hogan, starting from the early days of Hulkamania to the state it currently lies in. We see brief footage of Hogan winning his first WWF title by pinning the Iron Sheik. The voice of Vince McMahon tells us that he created Hulkamania. Vince says he hates Hulk because he made him, and then he turned his back on him by joining the competition, by joining Ted Turner and WCW. McMahon says that Hulk testified against him in the trial of his life when he was being indicted on steroid distribution charges. And Holly, I've got a story for you.
Go on.
From SportsKeeda. The legal case United States versus McMahon, initiated in 1994, revolved around Vince McMahon and WWE allegedly providing illegal steroids to wrestlers. So the question arises, what motivated Hulk Hogan to testify? Well, federal authorities apparently convinced the Hulkster to testify against McMahon to ensure and safeguard his own interests. During the second installment of Mr. McMahon, Hulk Hogan discloses that he was pressured into testifying against Vince McMahon. He was supposedly threatened with the possibility of having the focus of the investigation directed to him if he chose not to comply. Worried about the consequences of potential government inquiry, Hogan decided to betray McMahon and testify against him during the trial. Hogan's decision to testify against McMahon came shortly after he had signed with WCW. At the time, World Championship Wrestling was viewed as WWE's biggest competition, rightly so. The Hulkster's decision to join them, coupled with his subsequent decision to testify against the legendary promoter, is widely looked upon as the ultimate betrayal. Going into the court, the expectation was for Hulk Hogan's testimony to tip the scales in the government's favour. After all, they had the man who was once Vince McMahon's number one star testifying for them. However, things didn't go as planned. Hogan was asked a series of questions, including those that were pertinent to the case and had to do with the accusations that McMahon was supplying his wrestlers with steroids. But, to the surprise of many, when asked about this and if Vince had told him to take steroids, Hogan's response was straight up, no. To this day, many believe that this is what saved Mr. McMahon from what would have been an absolute disaster. And furthermore, basically from stuff that I've listened to and read up on mm-hmm. the topic, Hogan led the US government to believe that he was going to tell them exactly what they wanted him to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, had they known he was going to say that, they would not have put him up on the stand. But yeah. the fact that they had him up there and he said, no, he never did. And to be fair, none of the wrestlers that went up there, even the ones that disliked him, ever yeah. told him, ever said that he told them to take steroids. So I think there was just like a, you know, nudge wink type affair with that relationship. But he said to Rick Rude, who was one of the people that also testified against him, he said, Rick Rude, they said, oh, Rick, did he ever say to you, oh, you need to take steroids? He said, no, he didn't. He said, I looked small, is what he said.
Implied. And it's,
yeah, there's the implication there.
But it's not actually verbally saying, do it.
Exactly that. So that factored into it as well. But I thought that'd be a little bit
yeah.
interesting for you to get the bigger scale of things. McMahon refers to Hogan as a coward and says that many times he has thought to himself what would happen if he and Hulkster did have a fight. We see footage of Vince striking Hogan in the back with the chair before driving the steel into his face. He stabs him with a pen until it's covered in crimson and then makes Hogan sign the contract in his own blood. It's quite a powerful image.
Yeah, I don't like them.
Hulk says that Vince had better be saying his prayers and eating his vitamins, ironically.
Oh, yeah.
The voice of Mean Gene tells us that only one man can leave with their head held high, and the loser, certainly if it is Hogan, will be forced to retire. Indeed, this is a match 20 years in the making. The final line we have is Vince declare he made Hulk Hogan and now he's going to kill him. Hulk Hogan versus Mr. McMahon in a street fight. Holly, who are you siding with?
Oh, I wonder.
Vince McMahon?
Absolutely not.
Like a bit of poo play? Is that
oh,
what you...
Yeah. God, no.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be Hogan. But I yeah. Anticipation was very low.
That was where you've kind of preempted my next question there.
Very low.
Did you think it was going to be anything of entertainment value at
no,
all?
No, I didn't. No? I really, really didn't.
And you were looking how long was left on the show. And
of course it was.
I was thinking at this point, was it about an hour or so left? No, there was probably an hour and a half yeah. left when this one started. So you're thinking, oh God.
Please let it be quick.
Yes. Well, I assume you were aware that Rock and Stone Cold were coming up later.
I was.
And you were aware of Kurt Angle, I yep. assume, and Lesnar. So you thought, okay.
Yeah.
There's still hope. Mm-hmm. There's still hope. Holly, let me ask you this one simple question. Why in God's name, in a match between these two men, would you have Hulk Hogan come out first?
The only possible reason I can think is because of the person that comes out second
wanted
it that way.
It makes absolutely zero sense to me.
Absolutely none. None at all.
Also, not a fan of the revisionist song they've given Hogan here to avoid copyright issues, as expected, because it was Voodoo Child that he was coming out to at this point. But anyway, as expected, a great reception for the future Hall of Famer. Taz says that this could well be the last time we see Hulk Hogan, as McManamania could well run wild. Sounds like a new McDonald's sandwich, that.
Yeah.
Hogan grabs a sign from a fan that reads, Vince still sucks, and he tears it in half before completing his walk to the ring. Usual Hogan fanfare in the ring, but he is quite short. Oh, sorry, but it is quite short as the sound of McMahon's music and the man himself is not far behind. Just cuts him off.
Yeah.
Give him as much stick as you like, and most of it, if not more, is well deserved. Regardless of what supplements he's taken, he is in incredible shape.
His traps are off the
scale. I knew you were
going to
comment on the traps.
It's ridiculous.
Yep. Yeah, he's in good nick.
It's, I mean, yeah, but. It does nothing, but I don't know. It's also something about them. On someone else, I can look and go, that looks good.
Yeah.
weirdly on him. I look and
pop
go,
the head off.
Oh, it's weird.
Yeah.
That is weird.
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Absolutely. He enters the ring and has a crazed look in his eye as he stares down Hulk Hogan before planting a big slap across his face. In response, Hogan charges and tackles McMahon to the floor as the bell sounds. Really, 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 really bad rights and lefts, and even worse, head slamming into the canvas. A rake of the boot across the eyes and the Hulkster throws his bandana at his boss. Two big right hands and a running clothesline put McMahon on the canvas where he has to cover up for more rights and lefts.
Mm-hmm.
Choke by Hogan, but it's perfectly legal in the street fight environment. Hulk administers a beatdown in the corner and stomps a mud hole in the chairman's chest before resuming another choke. McMahon blocks his face going into the buckles and scores with a back elbow before levelling Hogan with a clothesline of his own. Big kick to the ribs and McMahon rushes Hogan into the corner where he delivers a series of shoulder blocks. Series of knees to the midsection has Hogan in trouble in the corner and two back elbows follow in quick succession. Rights and lefts by Vince put Hogan down to the canvas and he now drives the knee into an elbow before he shifts to a hammerlock. At this point, Holly, I'd like to ask you, was this living up to your expectations as low as they were?
Oh, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah,
pretty
I mean... much.
I did also wonder if McMahon did some training with Undertaker first on the shadow, like, shadow boxing style.
Oh, God, right.
Oh, that's where he's been getting his tips from.
I was thinking, did he go old school? I don't remember that.
No, but it would have been fitting.
Oh, God. Heading to the outside, McMahon wraps the left arm of Hogan around the ring post.
Oh, keep drinking.
Before returning back into the ring. Greco-Roman knuckle lock applied by the genetic jackhammer as the fans begin to rally behind the Hulkster. Hogan manages to get back to his feet, but is knocked back down to his knees courtesy of a kick to the gut. Once again, Hogan makes it back to his feet and the two men clash chest to chest, but on the third impact, Vince lands a kick to the gut, sending Hogan back down to his knees. The fans increase their volume as Hogan looks to overpower the CEO, but as the tides look to turn, McMahon scores with another kick and throws Hogan out of the ring via the middle rope. Face first into the barricade goes Hulk, and now McMahon applies a half Nelson as he clubs away at the back. Just really not knowing what to do here is what that struck me as. Back to the hammerlock, and Vince runs Hogan shoulder first into the ring post.
Another large drink.
Looming over the downed Hulkster, Vinny begins to flex and his traps are ridiculous. McMahon shoves a member of security out of his chair and takes a wild swing at Hogan, who manages to duck, causing Vince to strike the ring post instead.
I don't know if we count it or not, but I did.
You put drink?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I would say no.
I feel like...
You just wanted
to
drink.
At this point, I mean, I've wanted to the whole time, but not been allowed. So at this point, this needed it.
Right, fine. A right hand from Hogan drops Vince, and now he gets treated to a visit to the ring post. That's a drink.
Yeah, the biggest one of the time.
Hogan pinks.
Ooh, okay.
Sorry, I was thinking about his sex tape. Hogan picks up the chair and begins smacking it off the barricade before cupping his ears to the fans. He cracks the steel on the head of Vince, who does what's right for the business. What does he do, Holly?
What do you mean?
Begins to blade.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I have written that down.
With McMahon on his knees, Hogan opens up with a flurry of right hands to the freshly cut forehead of the boss. They're not good, are they?
No.
They return to the ring and Hogan is enjoying taking his time landing right hands. The final shot sends Vince rolling back to the outside, but Hogan is in hot pursuit. Another chair shot to the back this time as we see the blood drip from the head of Vince onto the black mats. It's kind of a good visual though, yeah. It's kind of dark. Second chair shot to the back sounds equally impactful. Hogan lines up another chair shot to the head, but McMahon ducks and Hugo Savinovich takes the metal directly in the face.
This poor man. My God.
The Hulkster drags McMahon back towards the ring, but eats a massive low blow, dropping him to the floor. Vince has the chair, and now it's Hogan's turn to get a face full of steel and do what's right for the business by running that razor. Not Ramon. For some unknown reason, McMahon retrieves a ladder from under the ring and sets it up. Vince goes to climb the ladder, like the Hardys, according to Michael Cole, but it's pulled back down by Hogan. If Vince got up there and started doing that.
Absolutely livid. I'm like, there's no comparison. Absolutely not. Shut your mouth.
Oh, dearie me.
Livid.
Vince goes to climb the ladder, like the Hardys, but is pulled back down by Hogan. McMahon fights back and smashes Hogan into the announce table before squashing a cable guy who no-sells like a hero.
Yep.
God help us, Holly, even Hugo has bladed for the business.
Yes. Honestly, this is crazy. Oh. Go on, what's got you?
What? Look, man now move the ladder to be positioned. McMahon. McMahon now moves the ladder to be positioned between the two announce tables and begins removing the top of the Spanish side. Monitor to the head of Hogan, who collapses, leaning on the Spanish announce desk, but kindly moves himself closer to the ladder. A quick choke by McMahon, who now climbs to the top of the ladder, and he's looking down at a bloody Hulkster.
Mm.
Did you think this was going to end well?
No, I'll be honest, no.
He mockingly...
Considering that all McMahon has done is throw a few hands at this point, I was like, oh good, we're going to launch him off a table... A ladder onto a table.
He mockingly cups his ears to the fans while seated on the top rung, which I liked, before taking flight and connecting with a super leg drop on Hogan. Both men are down. Holy shit.
Mm.
Holy shit. Wasn't expecting McMahon to drop a leg off the top of a ladder.
No, I'll be honest. And I do think from this point is where maybe my interest was a little bit...
peaked.
Oh, okay. Well,
okay.
It's given a little bit of something.
Okay. Bet you did not expect we'd be seeing that, Holly.
No.
Vince is still pissing blood from the forehead, and we see the cable guys now at least nursing his shoulder out of shot. Hogan is rolled back into the ring, and Vince follows. He drops his arm and the cover for the one, two, no. Hulk kicks out. A second cover, and we get the same result. Vince looks enraged as he wildly scans the area to find, no doubt, another suitable weapon to dole out punishment. He heads to the outside, and after looking for a moment, lifts up the skirting of the ring to look underneath and retrieve a lead pipe. What we see next, Holly, is one of the most iconic visuals of any WrestleMania, a deranged and bloody Vince McMahon slowly emerging into view at ringside with lead pipe in hand.
He does do that very well, actually. I'll give him his due.
He does. Vince cocks his hand back to deliver the killer blow, but Hogan from his knees in desperation scores with a low blow of his own. Both men are down.
Yeah, in a minute I'm going to need you to explain why this was a thing.
Okay.
I don't get it.
Okay, I actually don't know what you're referring to either, so that'll be interesting.
Please do.
Hang on a second. The crowd become loud as a man enters the ring. Holly, believe it or not, the hot rod, Rowdy Roddy Piper, has returned to WrestleMania.
Thank you. But I don't understand. What? What's... Why?
Who did Hogan go up against at the first WrestleMania?
Right, okay. Because I couldn't work out who he was there for, against...
Exactly, that was the whole thing.
Right.
Like, he doesn't like McMahon because he doesn't like authority, but he hates Hogan.
Right, he just was there.
Yeah.
Okay.
What a man, though, Piper is. Bless him.
He ages in reverse as well, I'm sure, because...
His face does, his body doesn't.
Well, no, but he looked younger here than he did back then.
Piper removes his coat as the crowd go nuts. He begins pointing and yelling at his former rival, Hulk Hogan, and does the same with Vince. He spits at Hogan and kicks Vince up the arse before setting his eyes on the lead pipe. Piper hates both men, but what will he do? Come on, Junior, get up! Don't call Vince Jr.
Mm-hmm.
That is a big pet peeve of his. You know, Vince had absolutely had to hate that. Absolutely. He hated being referred to as Jr. So much so that he banned wrestlers from having Jr. in their name under his watch.
Oh.
Hence why it was Rey Mysterio and not Rey Mysterio Jr.
Oh.
Because in WCW it was always Rey Mysterio Jr.
I see.
Yep, so they dropped that.
Oh.
Piper stands between both men as he signals Vince to get up, but instead turns his attention at the last minute to Hogan and cracks him in the skull before blowing him a kiss and smacking his ass. A big up yours follows as Piper begins to head back up the aisle. So Hogan's dead.
Well, should be. But we've seen that pipe before.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a tongue twister, there's one for you. What? Rowdy Roddy Piper picks up the pipe.
Well, holy shit, yeah. Rowdy Roddy Piper picks up the pipe. And
go.
A pack of pickled peppers.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I thought, oh, that's a good one.
Did I say that or did you say
no,
that?
No, I wrote it
oh,
down.
I was going to say, that's
to
very
bring,
good.
To bring to the table.
That is very good. McMahon slowly makes the crawl and drapes his arm over the Hulkster and we get the one, two, no, Hogan kicks out because he defies death. A bloody and battered Vince returns to the steel pipe, but the steel pipe now, it's
Ooh.
Gone from lead to being steel. It's definitely lead. But as he lays his hand on it, referee Brian Hebner places his foot on the other side and prevents it being picked up.
Of course he does.
Hebner.
Of course he
Hebner.
Does. He's here.
Slowly Vince scans upwards until he's glaring into the eyes of the official. In classic Hebner fashion, Vince grabs him by the collar and goes to throw him out of the ring, but Brian jumps too high and gets mangled in the ropes. Vince tries to kick him through the ropes, but still no luck, and angrily pulls him back to his feet and throws him out the other side.
This
fucking exquisite.
Gives me everything. Everything.
As soon as I saw that, I went, excellent.
It wouldn't be anything we watch without something like this.
I know.
From one specific
family line.
Family, yeah.
Oh. Oh, dearie me. McMahon returns to the pipe and begins waving, signalling Hogan to get to his feet. And now the referee uniform makes sense as we see Sylvain Grenier jog down to the ring. Before he can make it, interesting story about Sylvain Grenier. There was a story that he got a job in the company because he was a sexual partner of Pat Patterson. How true that is, I don't know, but that was certainly a rumour that was going round. Before he can make it to ringside, he's caught by another official who begins shoving him and eats a right hand for his troubles. Lead pipe connects to Hogan and he falls to the floor convulsing in classic Hulk fashion where the little shake. It's great. Sylvain slides into the ring and this should be academic. Vince hits the ropes and drops the leg. We get a hook of the leg and the one, two, no, Holly, would you believe it? Hogan has kicked out, brother. Of a leg drop.
Of course, but he starts doing my favourite bit is coming.
The crowd erupts as a bloody Hogan looks at the claret all over his hands with wide eyes and he shakes his head at his boss. It's been a while, Holly, but we are getting a WrestleMania Hulk up.
Mm-hmm.
Right hands are having no effect as Hogan shakes his way around the ring. You! And the finger wag that will make Yay. Holly oh so pleased.
Yeah, that's all I'm here for. Hogan match.
Right hand from Hogan lands and a series for Sylvain Grenier 2 who is sent over the ropes to the outside. McMahon blindsides Hogan with the double axe handle, but we get another finger point and wag from Hulk, who resumes right hands. Off the ropes and the big boot connects. We know what comes next. Hogan cups his ears to the crowd before hitting the ropes and dropping the leg not once, not twice, but three times. Hook of the leg and we get the one, two, three. Hulk Hogan is your winner by pinfall. Hogan celebrates in the ring with his usual pose down and Holly, it might be true, Hulkamania might just live forever. The cameras take us up the entryway where we see a suited Shane McMahon slowly walk down to the ring. When he gets to the ring, he puts his hands up to suggest that he doesn't want any trouble, and Hogan sits on the middle rope to allow him to enter. The two men stare at one another before Hogan drops to his back and exits the ring, allowing Shane to check on the condition of his father. In another great visual, we see a prone McMahon still have enough faculties to raise a middle finger like he is Eminem in 8 Mile as he leaves the ring. Because
yeah.
He does that one where they raise the fingers on either side and it doesn't.
Yeah, they bend. Like, yeah,
I don't like it. Either way. Holly, though, what did you think of this match?
Low expectation. Very low. But it exceeded that expectation. I'm not saying it was great. It was all right. It was all right. I thought this was going to get a 0.5. I gave it a 2.25.
I gave it 3.
Oh, wow.
I thought the drama and the visuals in it and everything. Yeah. Man coming off a ladder. I'm sorry. But the lead pipe thing, even Hebner standing on it and Vince going...
Oh, yeah, that's funny.
Up at him is great. And Vince is a crap wrestler, but his visuals and facial acting, whilst can be ridiculous, can also be so spot on at times. It's and this is a great example of it. Yeah, as a wrestling match, this was awful.
Yeah.
Awful, horrendous. But everything else that went into it, I was like, do you know what?
Yeah, I was
fine with it.
I was just happy I got my no.
And you got it twice.
Yep.
Twice on the same show. That's something. That is something. So that over-delivered.
It did.
And now you're only left to 2 matches.
I am.
So do you think we were going to come down or do you think we were going to continue to crawl upwards? What did you think? Also, what did you think was going to be the main event, actually?
Well, the
yeah,
two,
what the two that was left?
For me, it would have made sense for the one that comes next to be the main...
Given who's involved.
And given the fact that it was the last... Yeah, just, I don't know. Fucking taking it away again.
Don't worry, we'll cover that. We'll cover that. No. Sorry, we've only got to wait till WrestleMania 39 and we get another Stone Cold match.
I know, it's not quite the same.
It's not, I'll give you that. With that bit of business done, we now go to a promotional package of The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. From here, we head to a VT package of the rivalry between the two men. Austin says that 7 months ago, he told Vince McMahon that he could shove this job right up his ass, but eventually the Rattlesnake got sick and tired of sitting at home, not kicking ass, other than his wife's, but we'll leave that. Austin promises... Hey, it happened.
I know.
Austin promises that now he's back, he's going to raise more hell in the ring than he ever has in his entire life. Out comes The Rock, who is dead set on writing the records. 2 times The Rock has lost at WrestleMania to Stone Cold. It's the only thing that The Rock hasn't done in this business. Oh, he hasn't been women's champion. We see footage... Santino's done that.
True. Yeah.
We see footage of the long story between the two men as Limp Bizkit's song we heard earlier in the night begins to play. I don't know, Holly, if you spotted this, but in one of their interactions, you can clearly see that Stone Cold has blown the arse out of his jorts. He had a rip right down the arse.
Yes, I did see that,
okay.
Actually, yes.
kind of takes away a little bit, doesn't it?
A little bit.
Also, how do you feel about the Stone Cold jorts?
Do you know what? I actually was going to write this down. Weirdly, I would prefer those over Cena's jorts.
I agree.
A nice tight, to me, they just tight. Look like jeans that have, you know, had their sell-by date, cut them off, shorts.
Yeah, Bosh, Daisy Dukes, very nice. But no, I agree.
They're a good length.
They were, yes, they
They're
work.
They're fitted, yeah.
Fitted in all the right places.
Here for it.
Very much so. As the footage continues, it strikes me that it's very difficult to make a bad promotional package that features these two men, as the story often speaks for itself. And now we get to the match.
Mm.
The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Holly, whose corner were you in for this match?
Oh, I don't know, you know. It's a really hard choice, this. I'm stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Hey!
And The Rock is the only person I know, right? Yeah. Let's not forget this. Without a doubt, come on, we know it's Stone Cold.
Who did you think was going to win? It doesn't matter who you think is going to win! Okay, twice I've got her on that.
Oh my God, that made me jump so much.
She punched the microphone and everything.
Well done. That was brilliant.
Twice I've got you with
that
The Rock
so
now.
Funny. Oh, I love that. Scream not, but thank you.
Oh, she's going to hit me after the recording.
No,
and I can only apologise for your guys' eardrums.
That was amazing.
Oh, dear.
You woke me up a bit. No,
well, there you go. You're welcome. Just
so
in time
funny.
For this co-main event.
Oh, yeah.
What do you make of the Hollywood Rock entrance theme?
Yeah, fine.
It's really slow in coming forth, but then when it hits the slow... Ding, tsh,
yes.
Ding, ding, I like that.
Yes.
I do, but I didn't like The Rock being heel. I hated not being able to like The Rock.
Okay.
I was obviously going to be in The Rock's corner regardless.
Yeah, fair.
And that's, like I said, it's not because I dislike Stone Cold, because more often than not, as long as it's not The Rock or Bret Hart, Stone Cold is the person I side with, but yeah.
You can't win it.
No, there's something about The Rock. He just engages me so much.
Okay, yeah.
But anyway, here comes Stone Cold, and the back of his vest reads Bulletproof. The way that JR talks about Austin is always fantastic, but on this night you could feel there was something different. It was like JR knew this was the end of the road for the Texas Rattlesnake, but more on that later. As Austin hits the ring, The Rock takes his exit, and the Rattlesnake goes to each corner to salute the crowd in the manner in which you would expect. After he salutes the fourth corner, he returns to the middle of the ring where he's met by the Great One, and for the third time in history we get a Rock Stone Cold stare down on the grandest stage of them all. Feels big time, doesn't it?
It does. And it also, to me, made sense why he was allowed to have that time at the beginning. So,
yes.
I like that.
The bell sounds and Austin slowly removes his vest, not taking his eyes off his opponent. The Rock is the first to strike with the right hand, but it's blocked, and Austin opens fire with a series of his own. Seemingly endless number of right hands is halted only for Austin to flip the bird to Earl Hebner. He'll feature later.
Of course.
Whip is reversed, but The Rock misses with a short arm clothesline attempt and eats a kick, only narrowly avoiding the Stone Cold Stunner attempt that follows. The Rock rolls to the outside, signals up yours, and starts marching his way up the aisle. Didn't fancy getting the win back then in the end. But Austin is in hot pursuit and levels the People's Champion with a clothesline, knocking him head over heels. Face first into the barricade goes The Rock, and Austin lands a chop before taking The Rock and introducing him face first into the steel steps as an encore. More knife-edge chops from Austin find their home, and Rock finds himself elevated and dropped sternum first over the barricade.
Of course.
Before being clotheslined arse over tea kettle on the SmackDown commentary table. The Rock tries to escape back in the ring, but the Rattlesnake does not allow it and pulls him back out to elevate and drop him sternum first on another barricade and whip him shoulder first into the steel steps. Now the action returns to the ring where Stone Cold stamps on The Rock's hands before... Well, the first time The Rock no-sold it because he didn't realise. The second time he spotted it. Leading to a series of kicks to the seated People's Champion. Choke over the bottom rope has to be broken... This needs justice. Choke over the bottom rope has to be broken physically by Earl Hebner because of course it fucking does. Big back suplex and a hook of the leg gets a count of two for Austin. Meanwhile, on commentary, JR is saying that in his 30 years in the business, there are few rivalries that compare to the one that we see before us now. Do you agree with that?
Ooh.
Can you think of a rivalry that in your head goes, oh, this is more impactful or this feels bigger?
I'm very good with these off-the-cuff things because they are, but my memory doesn't kick in quick enough.
It depends what era you grew up in as well. Because,
yeah.
You could make a case of saying... Ric Flair and Dusty Rhodes. It was a massive rivalry. Massive rivalry. There, to be fair, there are so many to think of, but in terms of scale, certainly in the WWE, maybe not. Vince McMahon and Stone Cold is probably the one that comes closest. I would say, from an in-ring perspective, give me Stone Cold and The Rock every day over that. But in terms of the personal rivalry, McMahon and Stone Cold is probably a contender. Anyway, it's just something to think about. Corner whip, make it twice, sees The Rock land hard, but he reverses the third, only to see Austin rebound out and knock him down with a clothesline. Stone Cold chokes his opponent over the middle rope, and it is all rattlesnake up to this point. As Hebner once again pulls Austin away from the choke, Stone Cold now begins to march down the official, but finds himself chop-blocked from behind. We know the history of the Austin and his knees, and he rolls to the outside to look for respite, but is quickly caught with a second chop block from The Rock, who is in hot pursuit. And somehow, Hebner seems to get leveled as well in the process.
How does he...
He's like on his knees. It's weird. He's checking on him, but he's on his knees, diving out the way. It's bizarre.
I don't get it at all, but bizarre. It gives.
Yeah, of course it does. With Austin lying on top of the commentary table, Rock raises his knee and smashes it into the surface twice. The rattlesnake looks to struggle and walk away, but the camera, and the cameraman takes a tumble over God knows what. He's just walking backwards and goes,
"Wee!" Pure chaos.
I thought Hebner was still on the floor tripping him up, to be honest. Rock falls, Rock rolls Austin into the ring and continues his assault on the knee with a number of kicks to the back of the joint. Over the edge of the apron, the knee gets slammed, and now Rock follows it up by dragging Austin into the corner and wrapping his knee around the ring post after threatening the referee with a backhand.
He hasn't done... He's just wrapped it around, though, hasn't he? He hasn't thrown it yet.
No, he has.
Oh, I thought it was after that.
Oh, he does it a couple of times, to be fair.
Drink. All the time.
Drink whenever just you see
constantly
fit.
Constantly drinking.
Yes. Back in the ring, and Austin blocks the right hand to land a number of his own. Whip sends Rock to the ropes, but Stone Cold ducks too early, eats a kick to the face, and then a stiff blow to the knee, dropping him to the canvas. The Rock points to his temple to indicate that he is the smarter man, and the fans are not happy. Austin finds his knee elevated and rammed into the canvas, and now The Rock poorly laces the legs, and I cannot stress poorly enough for the sharpshooter to be applied. Mm. It is wank.
Yeah, not fun.
You can, the thing is, you can do it better. I feel like you're choosing to do it lazy, and that's what annoys me. A familiar scene for Austin being in this hold at WrestleMania, but he slowly claws his way to the ropes until the People's Champion drags him back to the middle of the ring. JR loses his rag with King, who keeps referencing Hollywood saying, "For God's sake, this isn't about Hollywood, this is a wrestling match. So take that, King, you bitch." Austin makes it to the ropes and the hold is broken, so The Rock decides to take the action back to the outside. Rock drags him to the ring post, and after threatening to slap, This is bizarre.
Cool.
And after threatening to slap the official, which changed to "I have no once."
Oh.
After threatening to slap the official again, drives Austin's injured knee into the ring post once more.
Another one.
Something catches The Rock's eye, and he picks up and begins putting on the rattlesnake's vest.
It's brilliant.
It's the over facial acting.
And we know I've got an issue with his overacting.
But it works as a heel.
It was funny.
When he's a face, it doesn't work. When it's a heel, it does.
Yeah.
The Great One takes a moment to stay hydrated before re-entering the ring, where he's met with a torrent of right hands. Whip is reversed and Austin ducks the clothesline, and when the two men meet in the middle of the ring, they both have the same idea in mind and level each other with another clothesline. Mm-hmm. King tells The Rock to take off the vest as it's nothing but bad luck for him. Both men are down, and Earl Hebner begins the count. You can see on Austin's vest the initials OMR. Holly, do you know what that stood for?
No.
One more round.
Oh.
He signalled that this was... He didn't tell anyone what it was, but had that put on because he knew this was going to be his last match. The two combatants make it back to their feet, where the rattlesnake resumes landing right hands. This time, The Rock ducks under a clothesline, but he runs right into a Thez press off the whip. Mounted rights from Austin, which pick up in pace as Austin gets a second wind. Marching bird-flipping forearm to the face leads to a hook of the leg that earns a near fall. Austin puts Rock in the corner and begins stomping a mud hole and walking it dry, with the crowd chanting, "What?" with every impact. The Rock manages to duck a clothesline and back elbow off a whip before scoring with a leaping clothesline of his own. The Rock kips to his feet and adjusts the vest before taking his eye off the ball, arguing with the crowd. As he turns, he walks right into a Rock bottom, hook of the leg, and we get the 1-2 no.
Before we carry on.
Yep.
I don't mind The Rock, right? I've got some personal reservations about him, but his kip up, I personally would say, when he does it bang on, is the best.
Ooh, interesting. Why?
I find them so impressive by everybody, but weirdly for me, because he's so huge, like
Drew McIntyre,
height wise, yeah, I don't know why.
Because Drew McIntyre's bigger,
but it seems like the Rock's, or the ones I've seen anyway,
he floats.
It's less effort.
Yeah,
like he just, there's no,
there's an elasticity effort in it.
Yeah,
the one I really like, and I wish I could remember who did it, but it was a female, and she does it, but she kind of, and then slowly stands up from it, so it's not like a whip and you're vertical. She lands on her feet and then seems to arch back to a standing position. And I can't remember, because it's like a fluid motion, and I don't remember who it is, and I always go, that's brilliant, okay, every time I see it. But for the life of me, it eludes me now. But yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it's rare for you to dole out a compliment to The Rock.
I
so
I might as well give
so on behalf of the People's Champion, we'll take it. We will take it. For the third time, King pleads with Rock to remove the vest, and we see Austin stalking his opponent. When Rock reaches his feet, he adjusts the vest and manages to catch the boot of Austin, where he pauses, flips him the bird, spins him, and hits a Stone Cold Stunner. Rock eventually positions himself into the cover, and we get the one, two, no. Did you think either of those were going to finish it?
No.
Oh, okay. They return to their feet, where The Rock scores with a number of big rights, which gradually pick up in pace until he flips Austin, the double birds, but is countered into a stunner. Holly, how do you feel about that sell from The Rock?
I just come to expect it now.
Brilliant.
But it's
brilliant.
Fine.
Oversell, flips upside down in the ropes, back into the ring. Brilliant.
It's not the best. There's one in my head that is, I don't even know who it is that does it. Might be Razor, you know. That's the best sell, I think, for me.
Triple H did one where he does like a stanky leg walk around and then gets hit with the second one, as Austin's clearly laughing at his sell. Yeah. One, two, no. Rocky kicks out. Hebner begins talking to Austin, who grabs a handful of his shirt and throws him to one side. Rock sees his opportunity and delivers a brutal low blow. The People's Champion begins clapping, encouraging the crowd to do so in recognition of his intelligence, but he also gives them the up yours signal. The Rock stands over Austin, slowly removes his elbow pad, hits the ropes but misses with the People's Elbow. Austin springs to life but finds the stunner miss its mark, and Rock pushes him to the ropes and scores with a spinebuster. Rock finally removes the vest, spits on it and throws it to the outside before taking off the second elbow pad and this time connecting with the People's Elbow. Cover, and we get the one, two, no. Stone Cold kicks out. Did you think that was going to be the end?
No.
Okay. Rock addresses the fans chanting Austin and tells them to keep their eyes on him. As Stone Cold turns to face him, Rock scores with a hellacious rock bottom. One, two, no. Austin kicks out again. The Great One is determined as he stalks his prey. The Rattlesnake has little left in the tank and struggles to simply make it to his feet. Second rock bottom is avoided thanks to a series of elbows, but a wild right misses and sees it connect all the same. Austin looks to be in pain as we get the cover and the one, two, no. The Rattlesnake will not die. The Rock cannot believe it as he scampers to the ropes wild-eyed and in disbelief staring at his rival. The People's Champion is pissed off as he marches around the ring, talking to himself before he gets into a position, waiting for Austin to return to his feet once more. The Rock hooks him up and pauses. He takes a moment and stares into the distance before delivering a third rock bottom, another cover, and finally we do get the one, two, three. The Rock is your winner by pinfall. As Hebner goes to check on the beaten Rattlesnake, The Rock shoves him to one side and begins to talk to him. When later interviewed about this moment, The Rock refused to say what he'd told Austin on this night. However, when he was asked the same question, Austin said that The Rock thanked him and told him he loved him. The Rattlesnake said he loved him too. After the conversation is over, The Rock heads to the Buckles to raise his arm in victory. Finally, The Rock defeats Stone Cold at WrestleMania. After a second brief word with Austin, The Rock exits the ring and over the barricade to give both his mother and grandmother a kiss before making his way back up the aisle. Has to be said, The Rock looks very much out of character in his actions and mannerisms after the final bell sounds. The camera takes us back down to ringside, where Stone Cold Steve Austin slowly begins to make the journey back up the aisle as the fans chant his name and his music plays. Before the Rattlesnake makes his final journey backstage, he takes a moment to raise the birds to the fans, who salute him in return. Holly, what do you think of this match?
It's a weird one, because it I felt like at the end, like once I knew what this match was.
When did you know what this match was, sorry?
Halfway through. Because
what tweaked it for you?
Someone said to me, I can't remember what it was. And then I was like, I know he leaves or he's done at some point. And I wondered when it was. So I Googled it and I was like, oh, like this is his swan song, effectively. But I thought, once I knew that, I was like, well, he's not going to win. Because then it's effectively like a nice little Passover. But I did
think... A Jewish festival.
I did think he would just get a bit more from it.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. Like, it just seemed very... I don't know. Something was missing.
Like a final nail in the coffin.
Yeah, like, just give him a little bit of something extra. But he didn't need it, I suppose. I still gave it 3 out of 5.
That's what I gave it as well.
Okay.
For similar reasons.
Not the theatrics, but even just everything about it wasn't necessarily just the match, this one.
No, I agree. And because the match, again, the quality, it sounds bad, but the quality of matches between The Rock and Austin, I don't really care for because I don't think they're great.
No.
But the atmosphere and everything else that goes into it really builds it up.
Sure.
So that's why I gave this a 3-star. Because is it a great match? By no stretch is it a great match. But it served its purpose. I see what you're saying about Austin not maybe getting in quite as much, but it felt right as well that he's like, oh, okay, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
It felt like
it makes logical sense, but I was just a bit like, oh, give him a little something before he goes.
Did you know this match very nearly didn't happen?
No.
So again, from the Sportster, of course. Up until 2022 at WrestleMania 38, when he made a sensational comeback, WrestleMania 19 played host to the final match of Stone Cold Steve Austin's professional wrestling career, though people weren't to know that at the time. He walked into the show to complete his WrestleMania trilogy against one of his greatest ever rivals, The Rock, and walked out to not have another match for 19 years. However, despite him putting on a great showing, with he and The Rock having undeniable chemistry and ability to have a fantastic match together in their sleep, Austin was actually in the hospital the night before. 2002 and 2003 had been a very turbulent time for Steve Austin and his relationship with WWE. After alleged backstage angst and unhappiness with his booking, Austin walked out of WWE after WrestleMania 18 following his underwhelming match against Scott Hall. From there, no showings, controversy, and more led many to believe that he would never be back in the company, which would have put such a sour end to the run of perhaps WWE's greatest ever babyface. He did return for a few short feuds and matches in 2002, but behind the scenes frustrations were still rampant. Annoyance at the prospect of a rookie Brock Lesnar beating him with no build led to Austin walking out for good, sitting out the remainder of the year. By the time 2003 rolled around, Austin and McMahon had managed to patch up their differences, leading to his return ahead of WrestleMania 19, where he was met with the also-returning Rock, who had unveiled his brand new Hollywood Rock persona. However, it wasn't all smooth sailing ahead of the show. On the road to WrestleMania, Austin wasn't the best of ways from a mental or physical point of view. Excessive drinking and a lack of real care for his own well-being had led to some problems cropping up, and these took shape right before he was set to do battle with The Rock. Speaking with Entertainment Weekly, he explained the potentially show-ruining sequence of events which saw him getting hospitalised. I was at the gym with Kevin Nash, and my reflexes were very touchy that day. We were on recumbent bicycles, and my feet kept twitching. I didn't think anything of it. I left Nash and went to my room on the 27th floor of the Grand Hyatt Hotel, and right before the elevator opened, my heart started beating out of my chest. Of course, there were instant worries about Austin's well-being, and it led to him being taken to the hospital. The root of the problems were put down to him having too much alcohol, too much caffeine, and not enough sleep, with his body struggling to cope with all of that. For most people, getting hospitalised right before a show would mean a cancelled match. For Austin, though, that was not the case, and he refused to let this get in the way of him missing WrestleMania. Before WrestleMania, Austin had still not been discharged or given the all clear, but he decided to do it himself and leave his bed to make the show in time. He decided that the show must go on, and whilst it could have been catastrophic to his body, there was no long-lasting damage from his match with The Rock in terms of the things that had put him into hospital. Austin went on to deliver a great match, ending his career on a high.
Wow.
So it was basically he was just energy drinks, knocking back alcohol and energy drinks, not sleeping, obviously, all that combined with the way his head was working bad. JR basically confirmed that he'd been in hospital with Austin all night prior to that. So obviously you weren't to know this, but that kind of adds a little bit of additional context to this match and kind of gives a bit more respect for him. I mean, he's dangerous in so many respects, but you wouldn't have necessarily known that, you know, seeing him just come out and do his usual shtick. I'd say there was something off about him. Like, he looked, when he was looking around the crowd, he didn't have that kind of, I'm going to kick everyone's fucking ass. It was a little different, but do you think it was a fitting send-off? I know you said it was missing a few bits, but was it fitting?
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense.
Okay.
But it's just another person that I'm losing now.
Yeah, we've got other shows, but on the WrestleMania journey, we won't see... Austin does make the odd appearance at WrestleManias, but it's not in, obviously, wrestling capacity. So, yes, I've taken another one away from you. I know, I'm sorry. Ugh. Don't worry, we get The Rock next year. We're fine. With that match in the books, JR hands over to Michael Cole and Taz for the upcoming main event. The promotional graphic of WWE Champion Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar emerges onto the screen, and from here we're taken to the VT, highlighting how we reach this one-on-one match. We see footage of Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble. On SmackDown, Angle says he'll face Brock Lesnar, but he did not specify the criteria. First, Lesnar had to defeat both members of Team Angle, which of course he does. As Kurt steps into the ring with him, Paul Heyman clubs Brock in the back with a chair, leading to Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas and Kurt Angle all beating down the number one contender. On a following SmackDown, Lesnar gets an opportunity to go against Kurt Angle, who's deep in thought, kneeling in the corner. Brock doesn't waste any time and attacks him from behind, quickly scoring with the F5, but of course, this isn't Kurt Angle. Brock realises this and stops the cover, leaving the commentators confused as they've yet to realise. To be fair, it's a pretty good look-alike when the hood's up, and do you know why? Because it's Kurt Angle's brother, Eric.
Oh.
As Lesnar leaves the ring to march down Team Angle, the real Kurt Angle, that was another one, nice. Curtain.
Nice.
The real Kurt Angle appears and begins beating down all that good stuff as we always see them do. After removing his body double from the ring, he secures a small package on Brock, and that is it for the 1-2-3. Stephanie McMahon lays down the law and says that if Kurt tries to get disqualified or counted out, he will still lose the WWE title, and Holly is happy.
Yes, I am.
Angle says that he won an Olympic gold medal with a broken freaking neck. He is not afraid of Brock Lesnar. Here comes the pain. Kurt Angle versus Brock Lesnar for the WWE title.
Mm.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you had high expectations for this.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to ask you a follow-up question of, but whose side were you on? Friend of the show, Kurt Angle, or a pre-Beast incarnate, Brock Lesnar?
I'll be honest, Brock Lesnar.
I was also on Brock Lesnar's side.
I really just rated him.
Yep.
Really did. For quite a long time, actually.
Mm.
But he just he's got that look that is immediately menacing.
Yeah, of course he is. It's fucking huge.
It's not even just that. It's everything. It's the way he carries himself as well. It's brilliant.
I feel like I would be concerned having any conversation with Brock in case he just snaps and then puts me in a pretzel where my leg's up my arsehole or something.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I get that. I get what you're saying. Holly, what do you think will be the very first thing I say about this match?
Oh, don't know.
Correct. The champion should not be coming out first. That being said, here comes friend of the show, Kurt Angle. With the Olympic gold medalist waiting in the ring, next out is the future Beast incarnate, Brock Lesnar, who noticeably has taped his midsection. They keep saying ribs. Ribs aren't here.
No.
Just putting that out there. Worth noting, Michael Cole's voice is absolutely jacked. Every sentence he says sounds ripe with pain.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad.
Yeah, he's suffering from something.
Very much so. Although, having done this for a while, I can understand his plight. Lesnar enters the ring and the two men go face-to-face with the WWE title belt raised. Mike Chioda separates the two men and raises the WWE title belt into the air, showing all four sides of the ring. The bell sounds and we're underway. Collar and elbow tie-up sees Brock charge at Angle from one corner to another, overpowering the Olympian. Clean break, however, as he steps away. Brock clutches at his midsection. Noticeable. Quick lock up and Angle shifts to a hammerlock before applying a front face lock, dragging Lesnar down to the canvas. Brock counters with a fireman's carry takedown and applies an armbar before Angle does the same thing. Although he nearly drops Brock on his head in that takeover.
Yeah.
Armwringer exchange leads to Brock taking Angle down with a side headlock takeover, but Kurt applies a head scissors that Lesnar quickly escapes and returns to his feet from. Stare down by champion and challenger, who pause momentarily before re-engaging. Quick go behind by Brock, and he lifts Kurt off his feet and down to the canvas, but Angle rapidly returns to a vertical base and succeeded in a standing switch before Lesnar does the same. Angle uses Brock's position to swing him down to the canvas, where Lesnar momentarily applies a head scissors of his own. Brock gets to his feet, but he's quickly taken down with a side headlock takeover. As both men return to their feet, Brock pushes Angle off and knocks him down with a standing shoulder tackle. Lesnar begins bouncing on the balls of his feet, but is clearly suffering from the damage done to his midsection within the past 2 weeks. Kurt grabs the leg and sweeps it out from under Brock, and the two continue to jostle for superior positioning. Kind of what you'd expect from two amateur wrestlers to kind of kick off like this, makes sense.
With these two, weirdly, also, the back and forth doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because I know, like, from history, that was
what they did.
Their background is.
Yep.
But with other people, weirdly does bother me.
Okay, interesting.
I don't know why.
Lesnar again manages to get Angle on his feet from a reverse waist, or sorry, get Angle off his feet from a reverse waist lock, but the Olympic gold medalist Olympic gold medalist frees himself with an elbow before charging into an arm drag takedown. Angle backs Brock into the corner but doesn't provide the clean break as he lands a knee to the injured ribs and follows up with clubbing blows to the spine. Whip is reversed and Lesnar scores with a back elbow and proceeds to drive the challenger into the midsection of the... No, what? What?
Ooh.
That's all bollocks. Whip is reversed and Lesnar scores with a back elbow and proceeds to drive the shoulder into the midsection of the champion against the buckles. That's English.
Yeah.
Angle is whipped into the buckles but gets an elbow up on the charge. Kurt gets a head of steam but runs right into a power slam from the challenger. Brock hooks the leg for a near fall. Boots in the corner by Lesnar, but he misses a wild clothesline and is sent for a ride on a German suplex. But whilst the champion celebrates, Brock returns to his feet and levels him with a clothesline. Knees against the ropes, but when Angle is whipped to the ropes, he grabs on and pulls himself under and out of the ring. Lesnar follows to the outside, but when they return to the ring, the Olympian is ready and waiting to unload with stomps. Corner whip is reversed and Brock powers Kurt above his head and press slams him to the canvas, an incredible feat of strength.
So impressive.
Unbelievable. Lesnar tries to charge at Angle in the corner once more, but is greeted with a kick to the gut that takes all the wind out of his sails. Brilliant spot here, as Angle German suplex Lesnar into the corner buckles. Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Brock rolls to the outside where the champion follows, and he runs him back first into the barricade, moving the wall at least 2 feet in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Lesnar is draped over the apron, where Kurt lays in a series of elbows to the spine. Back in the ring, Angle delivers a back suplex that earns him a 2 count. Corner beatdown leads to a snap vertical suplex that is still only enough for 2. We get a modified bow and arrow STF applied by the champion, and Brock has shades of purple that are rarely seen on a human being right here, unless you're kind of Brother Love pinking up your face in the mid to late 80s and early 90s. After a while, Lesnar lands a number of elbows to the ribs, but Kurt refuses to release the grip. Brock rolls onto his stomach, where Kurt transitions to a cross face around the neck, which genuinely looks brutal, and the sweat continues to pour off the challenger, who is no less purple than he was moments ago. Because with the hook grip that Angle has, you can actually see the whites of his hand, so you know he's straining in some capacity, which helps in how it looks devastating.
Yeah, I agree.
Brock returns to his feet and Angle jumps on his back, which leads to Lesnar charging into the buckles, driving Kurt back first for the impact on 2 occasions, where the grip is eventually released. Stomps and punches from Brock, but the corner whip is reversed, and when Lesnar begins to walk back toward the middle of the ring, Kurt grabs him and throws him overhead with a belly-to-belly suplex.
Mm-hmm.
Angle was pleased with that one as he woos and opens his arms to the crowd. Running knee to the back of Lesnar, and the second send him between the ropes to the floor. Returns Lesnar to the ring and follows, but he charges into a devastating spinebuster, leaving both men down. They get back to their feet at the count of 8, and Kurt unloads with a number of right hands, which Brock responds to with a few choice knees. Rake of the eyes by Angle, who whips the challenger into the ropes, but is leveled with a pair of clotheslines and a big boot that sent him reeling into the buckles. Shove into the buckles keeps the champion in place as Brock unloads a volley of shoulders to the midsection. Corner whip sees the champion get the elbow up once more on the charge, but mistakenly rushes into a belly-to-belly overhead throw. A second put the champion down and Brock drags him into the middle of the ring to hook the leg for the 1, 2, no. Lesnar looks for another suplex, but the champion goes behind and sends the big man for the ride with a trifecta of German suplexes, make it four, in fact. Mm-hmm. Kurt beckons Brock to get to his feet, where he looks for an angle slam, but Lesnar slips out the back door and looks to hit an F5. Angle lands on his feet and trips the challenger down to the canvas, where he applies the dreaded ankle lock. Great series.
Very good.
Great series of moves. Brock crawls to the ropes but is dragged back to the middle of the ring, and as the champion continues to wrench away, changing it up, Kurt applies a half crab and Lesnar looks to be in a world of trouble. Eventually he makes the bottom rope, forcing the hold to be broken. Angle clubs away and connects with another running knee to the kneeling challenger's back, but on the second charge finds himself elevated over the top and down to the outside. Angle returns to the ring and charges Brock in the corner, but the challenger sidesteps and unloads with more shoulders to the back this time, with Kurt trapped in the corner. Kurt reverses a whip out of the corner, ducks a wild swing, and throws Lesnar head over heels on a German suplex. Incredible scenes.
Yes.
Hook of the leg and we get the one, two, no. Angle stalks his prey and connects with an angle slam. One, two, no. Again, Brock kicks out. Did you know who won this match, by the way?
No.
Who did you think was going to win?
Why always, in my head, when I say...
You think they're going
to
win?
Then that's how I have to do it, because otherwise it's... Even if it's a stupid...
Like Stone Cold
person,
in the last one.
I will still stand by it.
Fine. Michael Cole tells us that this is the first time anyone has kicked out of the angle slam, as far as he is aware. I'm not sure about that one myself. Kurt looks for a second angle slam, but Brock counters brilliantly into a modified cradle that nearly steals the win. F5 connects, but both men are down.
Oh, what have you got?
Lesnar pumps his face.
Oh.
Don't know what that means. Lesnar hooks the leg, and we get the most delayed 1-2 no. Now it's Kurt's turn to kick out. Lesnar pumps his face. I've no idea.
I don't know what that is either.
No idea. Brock tries to pull the champion to his feet, but Angle was playing possum as he snatches the ankle and applies the ankle lock once more. And I love when Kurt does this. Mm-hmm. Really love it. Lesnar now looks to crawl to the ropes, but he's dragged away once again, and Angle grapevines the legs and makes it even tougher to escape. Somehow, some way, the challenger has enough strength to drag the dead weight of Kurt to the ropes and force the hold to be broken. Angle looks to stay on the leg, but is kicked away, and both struggle to return to their feet. The champion staggers towards the challenger, who looks to connect with a second F5, but no, Angle gets a small package, but it's only enough for two. Wild swing by Lesnar sees Angle attempt another Olympic slam, but Brock lands on his feet, and this time does connect with an F5. Lesnar doesn't go for a pin. He crawls with his back to the ropes and has a wicked smile on his face. He heads to the apron and slowly begins climbing to the top rope. He looks unsteady on his feet, but fires into the air to connect with a shooting star press. Unfortunately, he doesn't get the distance or rotate far enough and lands on his neck.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that before, Holly?
I, to be honest, I have seen that before, but I'd completely forgotten it was even in his wheelhouse.
Yep.
Because that was so long ago. But then when I saw it, I was like, oh... Oh, and then the fact that commentary continuously say, Kurt rolled out of the way. No, he didn't. He didn't move at all.
Because that was supposed to be the finish.
He just missed it.
I think he was supposed to hit that cover.
Which makes sense.
In the end. So Angle has to quickly think and makes the cover, and Brock still kicks out at two. You can see the burn mark on Lesnar's forehead where he's scraped it across the canvas. Angle struggles to get Brock to his feet, but when he does, Lesnar lifts him onto his shoulders and lands a third F5. Brock drapes his arm across the chest, and we get the 1-2-3. Brock Lesnar wins the WWE title by pinfall. And you say it was in his wheelhouse. It kind of wasn't, to be fair. This was a special thing, but I've got a bit of commentary on that later for you. Lesnar has his arm raised in the air, but has a distant look in his eyes and blood seeping out of his nose. This man is in a great deal of trouble, and Angle doesn't look much better himself. Brock has a blank expression on his face as he lifts he claws for the WWE title, mm-hmm. and struggles to make it to his feet. When he does, he's met by Angle, who congratulates the new champion with a handshake and a hug. Fireworks go off in Safeco Field as a highlight package plays and the show comes to a close. Holly, what do you think of this match?
I really enjoyed it, but I also enjoyed it more than I thought I would. Even though I thought it would be good, I didn't think it would give what it did.
Yep.
It's just that one error.
Yep.
If I knocked it down by half a point for that, but I gave it 3.5.
4 stars I gave that.
Okay.
I thought it was really good. That ending obviously is unfortunate. Incredible that Brock was even able to carry on.
Mm-hmm.
The pairing between the two, this is when Brock was still in his workhorse phase, and mm-hmm. he could have good matches, like really good matches. Always love being able to see someone throw someone around and vice versa, because Kurt Angle could do it as well. It's a shame it finished quite like it did, but it was a great match.
Yeah.
It was a great match, and I think that topped off the card quite nicely.
Yeah.
I think there were more highs than lows in the card as well, but I've got a bit of background for you, if that's all right, on the how Kurt Angle and Lesnar were. So this is from Pro Wrestling Stories. So it's got a bit of interview snippets from each of them and, you know, a bit of background on it. So, Kurt, I'd say Brock Lesnar was my greatest rival because we both came from the same background to wrestling. We were always competitive. We'd even do shoot wrestling thing behind the back to see who was the better wrestler. Brock, I have great respect for Kurt Angle. In 1996, when he won the gold medal, I was graduating high school. I followed wrestling internationally, collegiately. I mean, he was the best of the best. He was a guy I wanted to be like. He was a guy I wanted to train like. Kurt and I had a relationship that I don't have with a lot of other guys in the locker room because of our roots and what we've done. Angle. It was supposed to be the greatest moment in WrestleMania history. He was supposed to finish me with that move, but he nearly finished himself. Jim Cornette. I worked with Brock when he started at Ohio Valley Wrestling Developmental, and I'll be honest with you, he was getting paid about 4 or 5 times more than everyone else in the developmental program because of who he was. You don't come across an athletic specimen like that who won the NCAA Heavyweight Championship every day. The shooting star press he did at WrestleMania 19, he would do that for us all the time, and I would tell him he was crazy and save it for a big show at the Louisville Gardens when the WWE agents were there and not in the high school halls. He did it in front of the WWE agents, and they signed him directly because of that. The time he did it at WrestleMania is the only time I've seen him miss it. Angle. That match was so important to me because I have to have neck surgery immediately after. I was supposed to have it a month before because my neck was broken. So Kurt had a broken neck at this time as well. I couldn't really use my left arm because of nerve blocks. I knew there was a chance I could hurt it badly. Lesnar. To tell you the truth, I was worrying just about touching the guy. His neck could have snapped at any second, so I was really worried about everything I did with him. Now when I look back, I was very nervous, and I don't get nervous hardly ever. Angle. So when Brock landed on his head, I thought he broke his neck too. Lesnar. There I stood on the top rope, both arms raised in triumph, my head back, letting the crowd take it all in, and then I launched the shooting star press. Every wrestling fan knows what happened next. My boot slipped off the wet rope. I saw the people. I saw the top of the arena, I saw the mat coming, and then I saw Kurt's singlet, so I thought I was okay. Angle. It was my idea for him to do it, so I have to take my part of the blame. Laughing. When he missed me, I thought he was dead. I mean, I thought he was paralysed. Lesnar. I under-rotated, crashed in spectacular fashion, and gave myself a massive concussion. I damn near broke my neck. Angle. The only thing I could do was react to the situation and try to pin him. And the only thing I could think of, and this is kind of greedy, I was thinking, if this guy doesn't kick out, I'm going to have to hold this title for another month. Laughs. Because I can't. I was thinking, if both the company's top guys are out with broken necks, who's going to replace them? Lesnar. I was pretty much knocked silly. I could feel my head and neck getting really warm, which I'm assuming is a experience you're familiar with. Angle. He was out of it. He just had this blank stare and didn't know where he was. I said, Brock, talk to me. He said, yeah. That's all I heard him say. I just tried talking him through it and told him what to do next. He wasn't hearing me at all. He was out and I thought, we're in trouble. Lesnar, I still had enough sense left to know that I had to win, but I don't remember finishing the match.
Oh.
Angle, but before you knew it, he gave me the F5 and the match was over. I remember after he pinned me, clicked fingers, he was out of it again. I remember hugging him at that particular moment and saying, are you okay? And nobody was there. Just this stare that was going on behind me. And I thought, oh my God, he might just have a concussion or he might have knocked himself loopy for good. Lesnar, I can remember sitting there in the ring and just gazing. A funny feeling. The arena felt like I was in a little locker room or a gymnasium. And as I started coming to, the building kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. 1 minute I didn't know what was going on and then I would. It's all pretty blurry to me. Backstage I was getting warm, I was getting sick, and all these people surrounded me, people grabbing me, wanting me down on the stretcher, wanting me in the ambulance, and I wasn't having any of that. I just went nuts. And there's footage of Brock going, get the fuck off me, and like knocking people away from him. Everyone said I was hard to handle, and I can imagine I was. Ric Flair. Thank God he had all those years doing neck bridges in amateur wrestling. It would have killed a regular guy. Lesnar. The next morning I was supposed to do a sponsor appearance, but I couldn't get out of my hotel bed. After I received a few phone calls to rouse me, I finally crawled out and made it down to the appearance. When the sponsor's people saw me throwing up from the after effects of the concussion, they sent me back to the hotel. After you play in the Super Bowl or the World Series, you get some time to yourself or take your family on vacation. Not in pro wrestling. You're right back to work the very next day, doing live TV for Raw the first night or taping SmackDown two nights after WrestleMania. Now looking back at the match, if I could do it again, I probably wouldn't do the shooting star, but everything else I think I would keep the same. Because Kurt made it through the match without getting hurt worse than he was, and I was lucky to only have suffered a concussion. Angle. It wasn't the finish we wanted, but the match almost became more famous because of that. Lesnar. So Kurt went in for his alternative surgery, and I was right back on the road as WWE champion for the second time.
Wow.
So yeah, I thought that was interesting to kind of paint the picture for you, the aftermath of this. And you might have heard during the production of the show that King kept saying, oh, they're filming WrestleMania the movie. They were recording stuff, and they made like a little documentary about it, which I think features, I want to say, in the WrestleMania 20 DVD box set. I feel like that features as part of it as well. But yeah, like I said, always nice to kind of add a little bit of illustration for you. As a show overall, now that we're done, how did you score it? So I think it's an interesting one.
Yeah. As a whole, this is where I took note of the people that weren't there. So yeah, like we'd already said, you've got no Ed, no Jeff, no all these people that you're so used to seeing. But I really enjoyed it. There was the women's stuff I could have done without.
As in the cat fight or the match?
The cat fight stuff.
Fine.
But also, it didn't take up that much time. So it's not really an issue. 7.5 out of 10.
I'm not far off. 7 would have been my score for it. Yeah. But again, I've got this nostalgic thing about it because I watched it so much growing up. But funny enough, that didn't help or hinder it, I don't think. I was able to kind of watch it in seclusion, as it were. And yeah, I think it was a good show.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Would I put it up there with 18 and 17? Maybe not quite, but it's not far off. Not far off, to be honest, in terms of how much I enjoyed it as a show. And it had a good flow to it. It was long. Three hours and 40 minutes is a long show, of course. But there was no point where I was like, this needs to end now, like on any particular moment, which is big. It really is. But we're not done there yet, Holly. We never are.
No.
Because we've got to come to everybody's favourite part of any Win Twice recording.
Sure.
Holly's outfit of the night.
Yeah.
How many contenders do we have?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Six. I'll have a guess at a couple, if that's okay.
You do, yeah.
Jericho, I'd put in there.
No.
That is not acceptable. Okay.
My segment.
Fine.
My last word.
Okay. I made you jump earlier. I'll allow that. JR, I thought, actually had a cracking little outfit on. But
Looked good, but didn't make the list.
Kurt Angle.
Yes, but I have also lumped him in with
Team Angle.
The whole of Team Angle, because they all wearing identical.
Okay, and Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
And then I'm going to stop guessing. I'll let you fill in the rest.
So Ray is on there?
Of course, Ray. Of course, Ray.
I obviously do it as is, and once you're on the list, you're not coming off. Trish? Trish is on there?
Yep.
I actually put Victoria on there too, actually.
Yeah, fine. The black number.
Nice outfit.
Strong back.
Shawn Michaels?
Yeah, I nearly guessed him.
Yeah, because it's not even just... I know he layers up his gear, because you've got the entrance gear and then he strips it off. But even his normal gear, great. Hogan, yeah, brilliant. And obviously Angle, so yeah.
Okay. I'm going to say for outfit of the night, you went Rey Mysterio.
I can confirm I went for Shawn Michaels.
Don't know if I agree with that one, actually. That's one of the ones where I go, I mean, it's your segment, your final word, as you said. I probably would have given it to Mysterio. I think Shawn Michaels just coming back wins it. Because I think Jericho's outfit was better than Shawn Michaels, personally, in that one. But if we're like talking about any of his other recent WrestleMania attires, this one didn't quite deliver. I think it's the haircut, honestly.
Yeah, probably.
The haircut really takes a lot of it away from me, to be honest.
Fair enough.
But yeah, we've come to the end of yet another WrestleMania. The next one is 20, Holly.
Okay.
It'll be the 20th WrestleMania that we've seen as part of our show. Nothing to worry about.
Okay, so it's not like there's no pre-warning coming.
No, the worst one is... I want to say it's like 26 or 7.
That's a while off.
So, we're still fine for a while. Okay. I'm sure there'll be other things that I've forgotten about, to be fair. But, yeah, there was whichever one was the Miz was the bad one.
Right.
The one and only WrestleMania that I've watched with Jamie.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, special place in my heart for that reason, if nothing else. But before we go and hit the dusty trail, can you elucidate and tell the lovely listeners how they can get in contact with us?
WinTwicePod@gmail.com, and then social media is WinTwicePod.
So that is Instagram, YouTube. Obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, you can reach out to us, suggest a show and why we should watch it, and give us your thoughts. Obviously, any shows that we've covered, feel free to give in your thoughts on that, and I can obviously read them out on the next recording to get your guys and girls input as well. But that's pretty much the end of this one, is it, Holly?
Yeah,
I think
done.
Nothing else to cover off. All bases covered.
I think so.
Home run has been hit.
Yep.
And until next time, guys, take care.
Until next time, this has been a Win Twice Wrestling production. Peace out.